you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS in Pasadena for a morning of multilingual readings, interactive performances, and lots of kid fun. It's Super Fun Saturday on June 1st. Get your tickets at las.com/events.
In case you just joined us, Pennsylvania's highest court has thrown out Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction. That's opened the way for his immediate release from prison. The 83-year-old Cosby had served more than 2 years of a 3 to 10 year sentence after being found guilty of drugging and violating Temple University sports administrator Andrea Constand at his suburban Philadelphia home back in 2004. He was the first celebrity tried and convicted in the Me Too era. A little bit later on the program, coming up next hour, we'll talk with a legal expert about how the Pennsylvania High Court came to the decision that it did. But right now, we turn our attention to how our brains are wired and why, for so many folks, it's very challenging after being locked down, not meeting with friends and family members in person. It can be difficult now to get out, particularly in larger crowds and unmasked in public spaces. We're with USC Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Social Neuroscience in Health Psychology Lab, April Thames. Thank you so much, Professor Thames, for joining us today.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for having me.
So let me just ask you, putting aside your professor hat for a moment, is this something you personally are dealing with at all?
Yes, absolutely. The adjustment back to normal living has been quite interesting. I've noticed that just, you know, seeing people without their mask, it's definitely different, and being able to go in places and not have to wait outside and one person going in at a time. I mean, all of that is a new adjustment for me personally.
So explain a bit how our brains are adapted. You know, so many people, I think, adapted very well, even though there was a sense of loneliness at times and lack of connection. But people still adapted to the lockdown that we experienced. So how is it we're able to do that, but then it's challenging to get out of that?
Well, our brains are designed to, you know, adapt and form new connections in terms of synapses and ways in which we can adapt to changes in our day-to-day world. And so eventually over time, what happens is that different neural connections become strengthened in terms of how to do things. We learn socially by observation and observation of social norms. So now we are sort of having to go from, you know, a whole year of doing things a certain way and now sort of readjusting back to how things were before. So it's a process where our brains have to now sort of, you know, sort of disaggregate, if you will, the initial connections that were made when we had to adjust. Now we're going back to a different scenario. So people will feel a strangeness to it because it is no longer as familiar as, you know, what it was like during the pandemic.
And how does the life-threatening nature of the pandemic, particularly for older people, people with underlying conditions, but even beyond that, that risk of death, how does that particularly affect the centers of the brain that process anxiety or fear?
Well, there are, you know, specific centers within the brain that have been implicated in anxiety disorders, as well as, you know, sort of processing highly stressful situations, and that primarily is the amygdala, the prefrontal cortex, and the anterior cingulate. So those systems, when somebody is under high levels of anxiety, we call the fear, the arousal center is the amygdala, and that sort of becomes, you know, hyperactive, if you will. And usually what happens is the prefrontal cortex is an area of the brain that is designed to sort of temper down the amygdala response. So people who have really sort of efficient prefrontal cortex, you know, ability to use that, they can cope better, they can adjust better, versus those that have less efficient connections between those regions. They will find themselves having a very hard time with adjusting to the anxiety of the pandemic. So I think for everybody, because of the uncertainty initially with the pandemic and what was going to happen, we were all in a heightened state of anxiety. But for those with chronic conditions and those who are in the high-risk groups, they were sort of on a chronic anxiety level. So we would expect to see that now there might even be some exhaustion happening, because when you're under stress for a prolonged period of time, when you come out of it, the body becomes very exhausted, the body and the brain.
We're talking with a psychology professor at USC, April Thames. She directs the Social Neuroscience and Health Psychology Lab. I can't think of a more perfect title for this conversation than exactly what she specializes in at SC. If you have questions for her about how we're navigating a return out into a more densely packed world, going out to public events, eating indoors at restaurants, being out without masks, not necessarily distancing, how we deal with that. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Stefan in Corona Del Mar, very good to have you with us. Your question, please.
Yes. Hi, doctor. I'm an older gentleman that lives in Corona Del Mar. I've always been very touchy-feely and huggy and just a people person, if you will. But I took the pandemic very seriously. And now that things are back open and I'm trying to relive life, I'm hoping to transition into a more normal life. But I'm having a hard time. Case in point, I'm in finance. I went to a meeting and the other gentleman went to shake hands and I froze like a deer in headlights. This has become, I'm almost paralyzed with fear, almost, if you will. So I went to my therapist and the therapist is recommending perhaps medication to control this so I can transition back to normalcy. I'm curious on the doctor's opinion. Is this something that she would recommend medication for, or are there some sort of exercises, maybe yoga or breathing exercises, to get me back to normal?
Stefan, thank you for your call and for your question. Professor Thames.
Well, thank you. Yes, I mean, the transition for all of us is very difficult. Now, probably what is likely happening is that we were conditioned, if you will, about the dangers of interacting with others, with touching others, and with, you know, the mask. And so taking those elements off can be, you know, somewhat, as you described, paralyzing, because it's against what we've sort of been told over the past year of what to do. People have, you know, also reported that they feel less connected to other people, you know, because, you know, of wearing the mask, and now it's really strange not to. And it's interesting because, you know, the way our brains are designed to socially bond, there's actually a very, you know, well-known hormone called oxytocin. And oxytocin is actually linked to areas within the brain that are implicated in facial recognition. And facial recognition, we know, is essentially important for social bonding. So when people were masked up, they felt a sense of disconnect from people, because that is essentially, we read people's facial connections. We touch people. That is how we socially connect. So not being able to do that for a year, we've now become sort of, I don't want to say fear conditioned, but somewhat to actually interact in that way. So, you know, in terms of, I don't give medication advice because I'm not I'm a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, but, you know, over time, you know, we are really well at adjusting. Just like we adjusted to the pandemic, we can adjust to coming out of it. So I wouldn't, it depends on how much the anxiety is bothering you, but perhaps, you know, just practicing being exposed in more situations, you will habituate. to our new normal now.
Yeah, I'm not an expert like you, but you know, my thought on what Stefan is saying is it's still so soon after all of this that, you know, if hopefully other people can understand he's not ready to shake hands yet and not ready to give hugs, and you know, he's got his own time to come back to that. And again, you know, I can't speak to his degree of anxiety, of course, and that's a significant factor. But just in terms of our expectations of each other, I'd hope we could cut each other some slack and that it's okay if you don't want to shake hands, if you don't want to hug, if you don't. That'll come back at some point. We'll continue our conversation with April Thames, Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Social Neuroscience in Health Psychology Lab at USC. It's Air Talk. You can call her with questions at 866-893-5722 or tweet a question at Air Talk. Back in a minute. Talking with my KPCC colleagues, one of whom recently went to a bachelorette party, the other went to a farewell party, and just how strange it is to be in a gathering like that, unmasked with other people when we haven't done that sort of thing for so long. We're finding out why that's challenging from a brain standpoint with Associate Professor of Psychology at USC, April Thames, who's taking your call at 866-893-KPCC. I love that you mentioned about the facial recognition part and how our brains have really evolved to read people's faces, and with masks we can't do that because I think all of us have had that sense that we miss people's smiles or being able to smile at other people and get a reaction. I hadn't thought about it as a sort of determiner of safety that our brains evolved in that way. So, I mean, that would argue for us, that would sort of argue for unmasking a little bit more strongly from a psychological perspective.
Yes, absolutely. It is very important for us, and it's so great, Larry, that you mentioned the safety piece, because that is sort of, as humans, we have evolved by reading nonverbal cues and knowing what is safe, you know, within our social society. So when we're trying to figure out, you know, whether or not what we're saying is appropriate or our actions are appropriate, we largely try to read the cues, the nonverbal cues from other people, most of which comes through facial expression.
All right. Again, we're at 866-893-KPCC. You can also tweet at AirTalk and let us know. How long is it going to take for us to work through it? And I know it's a range. Some people, like I was mentioning, parts of the country traveling with my wife 2 weeks ago, people seem to be adapting pretty quickly. But of course, that's a self-selected group of people you are seeing out. There are a lot of people who don't. So what's the range of us feeling comfortable again?
That is an excellent question. I wish I had the answer. My guess is that, you know, for people who have been taking many precautions against COVID, staying in their home, I've had patients who have told me they haven't left their house for a year. They just have not seen people, have not left. And it's going to take them, you know, significantly longer than people who, for example, you know, only mask up when they absolutely have to. As soon as they walk out of a building, they throw the mask off, and who have, you know, still engaged in social gatherings. Now, usually, you know, for us to readjust, it sometimes takes about the same amount of time that it took us to adjust to a situation. So it may be for people who have been consistently doing this for a year, and who have, you know, not gone out of their house, who have stayed home, it may take a year. I don't know. It may take longer.
But yeah.
I think the time frame is going to be dependent upon the individual. There's a lot of pre-existing factors to think about. For example, does that person have existing levels of anxiety that were there pre-pandemic?
Yeah.
It might be harder for someone who has anxiety to then you know, adjust back than somebody who, you know, doesn't have that. So there's so many individual factors to kind of go into the thought of how long is it going to take.
I'm so glad you raised that, because I've talked with at least a couple people, maybe more, who kind of manage social anxiety to some extent, and pre-pandemic were able to go out, be at larger events, but it sort of required extra energy than it might for someone who was more naturally a social person. And in talking with people that are like that, it seems this has hit them even harder, because they sort of, you know, they were used to expending a certain amount of extra energy to manage this pre-pandemic. Now it's a much bigger hurdle to sort of get out there again after having this time away. The fear might have grown in the time that they were sidelined, so to speak. So any advice for people in that circumstance?
Absolutely. That's a great point. I think for people who are finding themselves having an extra, you know, sort of hard time with it, I mean, obviously, as a psychologist, I think that it is very helpful to be able to have a space to talk about that. So, you know, considering therapy, there's a lot of therapeutic modalities now that are remote, because people have now realized how much more effectively we can do psychotherapy via telehealth. So, you know, that is one way. Even, you know, support groups, you know, people have to realize they are not alone. However it is that they feel, whether they had social anxiety before and it's even harder now, or whether they had, you know, obsessive compulsive tendencies, worried about germs, and that may have been magnified in the, you know, course of that pandemic, or depression and the isolation piece has made it even harder for them. Whatever people are going through, there are many other people going through the same thing. So sometimes support groups can be helpful. Psychotherapy could be helpful. And then just slowly, you know, being forgiving of yourself and saying, you know what, this is hard for me. I acknowledge that. And it may be a longer journey, and yeah, that's okay.
April Thames, this has been highly informative. I hope you'll come back on with us maybe in just a few weeks and talk more about this. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you. April Thames is director of USC's Social Neuroscience and Health Psychology Lab. She's also an SC professor.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.